We left off last week, so we just began to introduce the prohibition in the Rabbanon of Shehiyah. We mentioned that although in the Torah, one can for sure leave food on the fire from Friday afternoon, nothing could possibly go wrong, even though the food is cooking into Shabbos, because generally speaking, you're allowed to set up systems on Friday for the Malach to continue. But this is one of those exceptions to the rule. And the reason why Chazal prohibited Shehiyah was they were afraid that a person is going to see food cooking in his house on Friday night, Shabbos morning, so he's going to get a little bit nervous. The food's not ready yet. He's going to start to plotch around, play around with the coals a little bit to heat up the food a little bit better. And that's going to be, of course, a multiple violation of primarily of Havara, of lighting fires. It may be Yisum of Kibbuy, maybe Yisum of Bishul, a lot of potential Yisum of the rice involved. So that's the all-encompassing statement called Shem Yechat V'Gichol. So Chazal prohibited Shehiyah. Everybody subscribes to this Gezeirah. The only Machlekes HaTanoim was, at what point do we say that we're no longer concerned about this? So we mentioned at the end of the show last week, that was a major Machlekes between Hananya and basically everybody else. Hananya, the Tanakh Hananya, was of the opinion that once the food is already Maicha Ben Drusoi, so bottom line is you could really eat it. If you're really stuffed, you could eat it that way. So therefore, it's unlikely that the person is going to go ahead and get all nervous and start to be mechatev and gicholim. And once it's mechatev and gicholim before Shabbos, then it's okay. And everybody else disagreed and said, no, it has to be nisbasha kol tzorcho, and even that's not enough. Not only does it have to be fully cooked, but it has to be so fully cooked to the point that it would be detrimental to stir the coals. It's called tzavik v'ralo. Nobody would want to stir the coals. And therefore, if nobody would want to do it because it's going to make the food taste even worse, so then we don't have to be concerned that the person is going to forget and shemichat b'gicholim. So how do we pass in the halacha? So we left it hanging last week. We left it hanging. The Gemara leaves it hanging. The Rishonim leaves it hanging. The Shulchan leaves it hanging. We're not sure how we pass in the halacha. The Rishonim have a major split on this topic. Even though Hanani is the Das Yochid, but the Gemara works really, really hard in the beginning of the third Bread of Shabbos to try to get the Stav Mishnah into Hanania and doesn't really succeed. Or at least according to some, doesn't succeed. So when all the dust settles, we're not quite sure how to pass in. Halacha l'maisa, how do we follow? It depends who we are. So the Shulchan Aruch really leaves it up hanging. But the Ramah is not the Lahokel. And I'm very, very careful with what I just said, that the Ramah is not the Lahokel. The Ramah reports that there were two opinions about this. And he writes that no good Lahokel, that the minig is to be Mekel. The question is, what exactly does that mean, the minig is to be Mekel? This is always a very, very tricky thing when you see a posek writing, the minig is to be Mekel. So the minig to be Mekel could be a statement in the sense of endorsing a certain opinion, saying, this is how we follow. And like the Gemara says that sometimes if you're not sure what the Lahokel is, look around and see what the Olam is doing, and that sometimes is indicative of what the correct halacha should be. So that could be what the Ramah meant, that he's giving his endorsement, he's giving a stamp of approval to this custom. Or the Ramah is kind of throwing up his hands and saying that people are doing whatever they're doing, nobody's listening to me anyway, so I'm not going to make a fuss about it because they're on Mekilim. But if you want to know what they do in my house, so the answer is we wouldn't do this in that house. So it's always a little bit unclear when you say that kind of a phrase. There is a Rosh, if I'm not mistaken, who uses the Lashon in the Sugya. After discussing it, he writes something like along the lines of Hanach Lehem V'chulei. So the question is, what does Hanach Lehem V'chulei mean? So there are two different statements of Chazal. In one place, Chazal say, Hanach Lehem Yisrael, Shem Ein Neviim Hem V'nei Neviim Hem, which is a very positive Hanach Lehem, namely, leave the Jewish people alone, because even though they're not Neviim, but they're descendants of Neviim. They intuitively figured out what the correct approach should be in the halacha. That would be endorsed in the minute. Or sometimes, Hanach Lehem V'chulei can mean, Hach Shiyu Shogin V'ayu Mezidin. It's another way of saying, no one's going to listen to you anyway, so don't waste your breath. But in terms of, that would not exactly be a grandiose endorsement of the minute. So it's very unclear just how far we're willing to be hanachlem on this. Are we really saying this is something that we like, or this is something that we're not so thrilled about? So there are different opinions in the Gedolei HaPoskim as to what our final approach to this topic should be within Ashkenazi communities. Within the Sephardic communities, there are more machmirim about this, but within the Ashkenazi communities, just how far the Ramah went, so there are different opinions. So the Mishnah Berurah gives you the impression that the Ramah was not so thrilled with this minhag. The Ramah was simply reporting about what was going on, but he wasn't really giving a green light on it. And the Chazon Ish understood the Ramot to mean that it's okay, that you really are, that Halacha L'maaseh, you're really allowed to do it. So yesh v'yesh, there are some people who do rely on this lechatchila, that they do shehiyah lechatchila, with no ands, ifs, and buts, and they have nothing else to rely on, and no other backups. They're just simply relying on this view of this presentation of the Ramah, which again, was the view of Gedolei HaRishonim, Rashi, Tosfos, there are many, many great Rishonim who subscribe to this view, so it's not like they're doing something that's Shelo Kedin, that's Asar, but it's questionable. So I would say as follows, that those who follow this, Hanach Lehem Yisrael, for you, plug in whatever you think that means. So Yesh Lehem Yisrael, they definitely have what to rely on, B'diavad for sure, we would rely on this. If we're stuck, we would rely on this idea of leaving food in the fire from before Shabbos, as long as it was the special Mecha Ben Yisrael. If it wasn't even that, then we have a very, very serious problem. But as long as it was the special Mecha Ben Yisrael, that would be okay. Not everybody is so thrilled about this. Now, if you think about it, most of the time, food, I say most because I'm going to redefine that in a little while. Most of the time, when we have shayas of leaving food in the fire from before Shabbos, we are usually covered by the Meichel Bender. So I'd say when people put up, you have stuff that you leave sitting on the fire from before Shabbos, you start cooking chillins, other kinds of things, soups, other things that are sitting potentially on fires on Friday afternoon. I've usually reached a point of Meichel Bender. Not always, depending, that's what I'm going to revamp my statement in a moment, depending on what time you put the chillin up. But if you put the chillin up in enough time to be at least Meichel Bender, it doesn't have to be completely cooked. It's not something that we would say it's this mashik or torah, any stretch of the imagination, but to reach the point of Meichel Bender, so it would take much less. So if it was put up early enough, you could be pretty safely assumed that at least you have this opinion to rely on. Again, is this the best way to rely on? Not necessarily. So let's see if we can come up with something maybe a little bit different to minimize the shadow a little bit. So within the very sugya of Shehi itself, the Mishnah already talks about possible heterim, things to, in a sense, circumvent the prohibition of Shehiyah. And the circumventions are really very simple. There are no great secrets here. Is that the whole idea of Shehiyah was Shem Yechat B'Gicholim, that we can set up some kind of a system that makes the Chit B'Gicholim either impossible or highly unlikely. Now, those are obviously going to be mitigating factors. So what could we possibly do to minimize the fear of Shem Yechat B'Gicholim? So the Mishnah talks about two different aids, two suggestions. One is Grufa and one is Ketuma. So Grufa, like the Grufa, Magrufa, means like to rake out, to scoop out, to shovel out the coals. So the way the Mishnah describes, the Mishnah described the Mishnayis, Bisman Chazal, so you had this Kira, that's what the name of the parak is, a Kira. So you had this stove kind of a thing. The coals, the wood, the logs, whatever it was, were inside this contraption, and the food was generally on top. There's another thing called the tanner, where the food was put inside. But again, we're going to talk right now about the classic example of a kira, which is close to the model that we have. We don't exactly have coals and logs and things of that nature. We have gases or electricity, different kinds of setups. One could have even raised the question, maybe the whole prohibition doesn't apply. Maybe there's no shem yichata, because we don't stir coals anymore. Rav Moshe writes in his shuvah that he doesn't think that that's correct. He thinks that shem yichata does mean literally gicholim. That means you're going to patch it out, you're going to play around with the source of fire. So my nafkamina, whether you're having a kira of Bizman Chazal, or you're having a stove of Bizman Hazeh, so you're going to play around with the source of gas. So the gas that we have today, whatever you have today that's heating up the food, is the halach equivalent of the coals of old. So just as everyone would agree, if you turn up a gas on Shabbos, that's a distant derisa, there's no shot about that, you're causing more gas to even if the fire is on before, but just the mere raising of the gas, that's for sure in a derisa, that's throwing more fuel into the fire, that's like driving a car. So even if the car's on from before Shabbos, that doesn't make a difference. Every time you press the gas, so you're putting more gas in, you're causing more fires, and more fires, and more things are being consumed. So of course that's an issa deraisa. So if we're working with the assumption, like Rav Moshe, that our stoves are a potential problem, so the Mishnah speaks about in the olden days, and we have to figure out how to extrapolate to our stoves. So the Mishnah talks about in the olden days, garufa. You simply shovel out all the coals. There's no coals. There's no shem yichat v'gichol. So the stove is going to still be pretty hot. It's been sitting with coals for the last 10 hours. The stove is still piping hot. You leave the food on top of the stove. You rake out all the coals. And shalom yisrael. So then there's no fear. There are no coals. There's no shem yichat v'gichol. So that's great. Of course, that would be kind of hard to mimic. That means, in theory, if you destroyed your oven and you destroyed your stove and you throw your gas tank in your basement or something, there's no source of gas, and then it would be okay. So that's not all that practical. So what's the second etzah? So the Mishnah talks about a second etzah of ketuma. What is ketuma? So ketuma means to take ashes and to simply throw the ashes on the coals. So unlike the first solution of gerufa, where we're literally getting rid physically of the coals, here we're just simply covering the coals by doing ketuma, and that also solves the problem. And this becomes a little bit tricky. Why does that solve the problem? Gruf, I understand, but how does Ketuma solve the problem? So there are different approaches in the Rishonim how this solves the problem. So there are some Rishonim who understand that what Ketuma does is that it's a beginning of a process that's cooling down the fire. That's the goal of Ketuma. If you have a bunch of coals that are piping hot, and you start to throw some ashes on them, they're still warm, they're still working, they're not totally extinguished, but they're on the way out already. So once you've already lowered the heat of the intensity of the fire, that in and of itself creates a certain mindset that, hey, wait a second, I'm not going to be b'chad b'gichol. The whole goal of b'chad b'gichol is to make things hotter. So if I went ahead and went out of my way and I bent over backwards and done something I would normally do to indicate that I'm not, interested in the fire, I'm interested in the fire actually going out, so aim the an anti-Hashem Yichat B'Gicholim, Golem Yisrael, that will be the antidote for Shem Yichat B'Gicholim. So that's what some Rishonim present as what the solution of Ketuba is. The Ran, in the beginning of the third Perek of Shabbos, doesn't seem to go completely down that route. The Ran tones it down a little bit, and the Ran says that what Ketumah is not that it's a really lowering the flame. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but that's not really the goal. The goal is that it should look different. You should walk into the house on Friday night, come from shul, and look into my, oh my golly, why in the world do I have ashes on top of my coals? I would never do that on a Tuesday night. Oh, it must be it's Friday night. Must be there's Nisidir Isid to be Machabdi Gichon. So it's basically, it falls into the category of Allah like a Heker. And again, we've had Hekerim. There are so many different areas of Allah where we have Heker that Chazal instituted to do things in a little bit of an abnormal fashion, just to remind you not to do something that's wrong. So according to the Ran, it's not that it's physically necessarily changing the temperature of the oven or the stove, but rather what's really happening is it's simply creating a certain psychological barrier to one step removed, less of a chance of potentially being Mechatta Begicholim. So this Machlekes that we've shown now becomes very important for us, because can we extrapolate from Ketumah of old to our modern day, and I say modern day, I mean 1920s, I don't mean 2020. So the Poskim 100 years ago began to discuss the phenomenon of a blech. I have a flame, and I have a gas stove, an electric stove, a kerosene stove, whatever kind of stove we're talking about, and I want to put my food directly onto the top of the stove on Friday, so that's a potential problem of Shehiyah. Now again, if it's Mitzvah Viralo, then it's okay, but most food is not Mitzvah Viralo. So if it's Maicha Ben Drusoy, then according to some poskim, I'm good to go. I don't even have to worry about it. I can put it directly on top of the stove. But the Shulchan Aruch would never permit that. The Sfarim don't permit that. And we're not even sure the Ashkenazim permit that. And even if we permit that, you know, it's not great, and there's some will disagree, and therefore we're looking for a little bit of a better solution. So some poskim came up with this idea, let's create a halachic modern-day equivalent of Grufa Ketubah. How do you do that? You take a vlach, you take a piece of metal, and you throw it on top of the fire, on top of the source of the flame, and you would never do that on Tuesday, when we're sure going to cook that way on Tuesday. So that becomes a heker, and that should be sufficient. Now the question becomes, does the putting of a vlach really meet the criteria of what Ketubah was trying to accomplish? So if you go with the first route of Rishonim, that it was trying to really minimize the flame, does it really minimize the flame? Does it lower the flame? I don't know. I think the metal conducts the heat. I think, again, I'm not a physicist on this, but I'm not sure that accomplishes what you're trying to accomplish. But if you go down the route of the Ran, so then, yeah, of course it changes the mechanics in the kitchen. When you walk into your kitchen, imagine you come home tonight for dinner on Sunday night, and your wife would have to tell you, wait a second, let me just move the soup around on the block. The block, I'm a sugar. Who has a block on a Sunday night? But Friday night, that's the tumor. You walk in, that's a kitchen. That's a Friday night kitchen. You walk in, there's a certain tumor, you know, we grow up with. That's why, even though, you know, we've moved on, most of us. By the way, for anyone under the age of 20, a blech is a piece of metal. It's a square. Usually buy it at one of the Hamish hardware stores in Brooklyn or Muncie, and you change it every Pesach. That's what a blech is, in case anyone didn't know what I was talking about. Okay? So, talking to a new generation, they got me. We said, you know, there's a certain surah of a kitchen, a Jewish kitchen, on Friday night. It always had the blech, and had the blech on the one side, and had your tea scent sitting on the other side. It was like, you know, it's an imagery. So, half the lights were, the light bulbs were unscrewed. You know, it was a certain tzura. I remember one year of my grandmother, Shalom, one of my lady years, when she used to always come to us for Yom Tovim. So she was with us. She used to come in Yom Kippur all the time. So in the lady years, when she wasn't able to fast anymore in Yom Kippur, so we had to leave a blech. It's a strange setup. You have to leave a blech on Erev Yom Kippur, because we had to leave up some hot water or whatever it was, whatever she needed, in order, in terms of having some hot food to eat. So it's a very mother thing. You walk to your house, there's a certain tzura on a Yom Kippur night. I always find it fascinating. You walk to your kitchen on Yom Kippur night, and it's like bare. It's like there's like the antithesis of what the Friday night looks like. I remember used to be very, very bummed up. Those last couple of years, I'd come back from davening, I walked out, the tea scents is up there, the hot water is happening, the kugel sitting on there, everything's all sitting, but Shabbos, whatever you have to, as we said before, yesterday, changed a lot of rules on the table. But anyway, but the regular Friday night surah obviously doesn't apply to regular Tuesday night, and therefore that would be enough of a hacker to permit one to potentially leave food on the fire and circumvent the solar subsidiary if you buy into this idea of hacker. The general minhag Yisrael was, again, blechs has gone almost out of style, but blechs in its heyday, in the end of its heyday, when most of us were growing up, so blechs were definitely followed by most people, and most people assumed that it was acceptable. The Chazanish wasn't a big fan of the blechs, but L'mais of the other was Nagel Hakel, especially in America, it became pretty common practice, and again, many cures in Europe was very common practice, to assume that a blech is not there everything, basically. It means not the Bishul on Shabbos, but it's matir shehiya, and even if we're not 100% sure that it's matir, but betzir of the fact, that's probably mutter anyway because the mechamin just say. So the oilam was very, very lenient to put a blach on.
And that was Chazidish, who was mekel.
Chazidish was matir. Chazidish didn't.
No, but on Michael
Benjamin. Right. It's almost like a little bit like Lashita, right. It's all like Maman of Shach, like that. If you're a real Chazidish next, then you can rely on the Mickey in the way.
What's
the
thing with whether
the
blach covers?
Yeah, that's what we get to know. So now then you have a further mechamin. Again, according to the Chazanish, so there's nothing to discuss. Blachs, he didn't like blachs. But within the world of those who accepted blachs, then there was a further breakdown, really, which was an issue in the American postgame, as to how exactly, practically, do you do this blach? What is the blach supposed to accomplish? What kind of a heker exactly is the blach supposed to accomplish? So the source for this machlokes was that, if you think about it, in the olden days, so the source of the flame and the way you would adjust the flame was the same thing. It means you had inside this hole, you had this kira, and you had this wood that was turning into coals. So the fire is inside, and the way to raise the fire is to stick your something inside. I assume, I don't know how to do that, but you're sticking some kind of something in, and you start the coals. Whereas Bezban Hazeh, that's not what happens. Bezban Hazeh, I have my flame is over here, so the flame is shooting out on top. The controls of the flame is 3 feet away. It's on the knob somewhere, on the sign, on the front. It's not in the flame proper. So it's a little bit of a different surah. So now the question becomes, within the lomdus of Heker, where does the Heker have to play? What would be the modern day equivalent of this Heker? So this was a big machlekes, the Gedolei HaPoskim in the last generation, between Rav Moshe and Rabban Kotler. So Rav Moshe was of the opinion that the Takanas HaChamim was, when the Mishnah speaks about Ketumah, so Ketumah means you have to cover the flame. That's really what has to be done. The flame has to be mechusa. That's the heker. The fact that it happens to be, you could just as easily adjust the flame as man hazeh, because the knobs are not covered, so much as somewhat. So the knobs are not covered, so what? But the ma'isa, the takana is that you have to have, the flame has to be mechusa. And if the flame is mechusa, so l'chor, that should be sufficient. If the flame is not mechusa, that would be a problem. And therefore, Moshe held that if you simply just put a piece of aluminum on top of the knobs, but the flame is exposed, the flame is revealed, so that would pose a serious problem. That wouldn't really solve the problem. Then you'd be stuck to the old story of relying on the Mechem and Jusai. So Rav Moshe's opinion was that Me'ik Mikra Din, what you have to do is you have to really make sure that the heker is B'mokom Ha'esh itself. Then Rav Moshe writes, the SSAs, he thinks he should cover the knobs also. Rav Moshe, the Ma'is, he should cover the knobs also. But if you just cover the knobs, he didn't think that really does the trick. Because the real, the Etzem HaHeker, the real Iker heker has to be, the Esh has to be Chusa. That was the tzur that Chazal was masakin, and about Rav Kotler was of the opinion that no, Chazal was not masakin. It's a halach moshdin has to be the eishas no chusa. You have to do something that's going to prevent. It's going to remind you not to be mechata b'kicholim. So in today's world, if you're going to stick a blech on a flame, but your knobs are 3 feet away, so that's not a heker. The heker has to be on the knobs proper, in the muck with the control, the place where the melacha takes place. That's where the heker has to be. So, and Aaron apparently held that Svar Ben Lekul Ben Lechumra. He held, you don't really need a blech. You just take a little piece of aluminum foil and stick it on top with a knob. That's also good. So the minig has become, many people have the custom to do both, that they want to make sure, im faraskva, we're already making a blech, so make sure that the blech is covering everything. So that was the institution, that was the discovery and the patenting of the bent over blech. Someone came with a great idea in Brooklyn 50 years ago, that you take a blech and you just bend it over a little bit, and therefore it covers over the knobs. That's assuming that the knobs were in front. If the knobs were on the side, when I was a kid, so the knobs, we had the knobs were on the side of the stoves, so you use your own creativity, and it's called a piece of aluminum foil. So you have a blech on the fire, and then you make your own blech, take a piece of aluminum foil, and throw it in and knobs and shine, and that's the makeshift blech. So many people didn't even do that. Many people just followed Rav Moshe outright. But again, that would be probably the best lechatchil. If you're im kvar asker, already making a blech, so you should try to cover. You should try to cover everything. We have more modern day now into our century. We have a little bit more modern day applications of this. This is related to crackpots. So a lot of us leave their children's on in crackpots. So crackpots are potential. Just continue the discussion. Start with the stoves of old, move them to the stoves of Europe, move to the stoves of America in the 1960s, and now we have the crackpots. So the question is, we want to put up a chillin sometime, let's say Friday afternoon. So is that permissible or not? So if the chillin has already been cooked to the point of Meichem and Shodah, different minhagim about how to make chillins. Some people like to throw everything raw into the crackpot, and some people like to cook all the components beforehand, and then put it into the crackpot all together at the end. So I cannot vouch for the taste or the different ways. I know that there are certain members of my family who claim, again, no one should be insulted by this, they claim it's the lazy version versus the unlazy version. Again, I'm not going to comment on that. It may have to do with which wives are working on Friday and which wives are off on Friday. I don't want to make any observation. I don't want to cause any shalom bias problems over here. But the bottom line is that those who make cholins in such a way that the food is significantly cooked beforehand, to the point that Nachman Ben Yosai, then the Ikra din are really okay without doing anything, because they're falling back on the Ramaz, whatever that means, and the Chachamim, whatever that means. But again, we're not too thrilled about that. And for Achenu B'nai Yisrael who don't do that, who like to put the food in fairly close to the Shabbos, so we'll get to a little bit later, I don't know if today or next week, about how close is close. Maybe closer may be better than further, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. So those who don't have this Kula Mechem and Yisrael, they're putting it up and say, Achmeis, an hour before, and the meat is not really a Mechem and Yisrael, assuming. So then what do you do? So then you have a real problem. Then you have a problem with Choladeus. So now you have to do Ruf or Ketumah. How are you going to do, Ruf obviously is out of the question, how are you going to do Ketumah? So you have to put a blech on. Now again, you're not going to put a hard piece of metal on your crockpot, that's going to work. You have to do some kind of a modern day equivalent, so you have to use aluminum foil. So you have to use aluminum foil. Now the question becomes, you use aluminum foil where? Where is this aluminum foil supposed to be put? So either the aluminum foil, according to Rav Moshe, has to be covering the flame. There is no flame. The flame is the element inside. So someone's going to say, what do you mean, Rabbi? It's always covered. It's covered by the... I don't know what's called the crock, which is the pot. It's covered by something. So you don't see the element. So the answer is, that's ridiculous. That's not a hecker. The whole goal is to cover it in a way that you wouldn't normally do on a regular Tuesday. So you don't say, well, the element is covered and therefore everything is good to go. That's ridiculous. You have to put some kind of a hecker there. So according to those like Rav Moshe who are working with the idea of a hecker on the flame, so you would have to put a hecker wherever the element is. So you have different kinds of crockpots. We'll hopefully talk about the different kinds of crockpots later. It becomes more important in terms of Zara, in terms of Atmana. But whatever kind of crockpot you have, whether you have one that goes inside or one that sits on top, the West Bend, whatever the different models are, the bottom line is, wherever the source of the heat is, there has to be aluminum foil between that and the pot to serve as a hecker. That's number one. In addition to that, it would probably be a nice idea to cover the knobs as well. Because according to Rav Aaron Kotler, that was the main solution. And even according to Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe recommended doing that as well. I am a big fan of covering the knobs and the crockpots, besides for the reasons I said before. I do think it's a very kedai to cover the knobs, and I usually do go walk around, at least when the crockpot is in my extended kitchen, or the shul kitchen, so that I try to make it my business to make sure that all devices in the kitchen are covered up with the proper aluminum foil, both including the warmer drawers and the crockpots. When things are in 26, 28 rectocord, I can't always say that I have the time on Friday afternoon to run on my way to Mimcha. So whoever wants to take that responsibility to make sure that aluminum foil is covering knobs as well, Tov Aleichem Bracha, but we'll make it a new committee, right? We have a new job. Okay, it's called the Knob Coverer in Judah.
I deal with
Okay, so whoever's in charge of... We can make it a new official member of the board, the knob coverer and 26 right there. Okay?
So since Friday morning, so it's okay.
Because you think we're in Bnei Brak, that everything is okay, everything's mutter, we're very religious, we're in Radin here, so maybe things are not so good.
If one lines the crock pot, it takes time. If one lines the crock pot,
oh, no, this is the source of my problem, right? This is exactly. I think that we may have the same issue in both of our houses. I'll tell you exactly what the issue is. So I'll tell you the truth. I'm a little bit weary about just relying on aluminum foil proper without covering the knobs. I'll tell you why my issue with the crockpot is. The whole goal, the whole cool of the black is assuming that it's a hecker. Hecker means you're supposed to walk into your kitchen on Tuesday and realize today is Tuesday, and walk in on Friday night and say, well, today is Shabbos. If you walk into your kitchen on Tuesday, and again, most of us don't use crockpots on Tuesday, but we would sometimes. I'm all the person would use a crockpot. I'm afraid to ask for a show of hands, but who here, okay, only those people who have a clue what's going on in the kitchen. Those who don't, please don't vote. But those who have a clue as to what's going on in their kitchens, so lu yitzuya, those who really understand the psyche of the wives well, if your wife would make a cholent on a Tuesday, would she have aluminum foil lining between the elements and the pot itself? Those who think yes, put up one hand. Those who think emphatically yes, can put up two hands. So who here thinks the answer is yes?
The
same aluminum foil is there. You mean you didn't take the aluminum foil? Oh, that is not good. That is not able. That was not the answer we were looking for in rectocord. Okay.
If you only use on Shabbos, that's okay, no?
No. So I have a problem. So I want to know. Is that really a legitimate hecker? So I'll tell you the secret. I'm not convinced that it's a legitimate hecker. I'll tell you, I'm not convinced. But what I do think is a good hecker, is covering the knobs. If you were doing it on Tuesday, would you have the knobs covered? Absolutely not, right? So that's what I like to do is that we have aluminum foil surrounding our crafts for other reasons, for other reasons, hopefully we'll talk about it in weeks to come, so that the aluminum foil is always there anyway. But which may be not a good thing, but the aluminum is always there. What I always do is, right before Shabbos, I daf cover the knobs. Because that way, if all else fails, at least I have a rhyme column. At least we have that svar to rely on, that the knobs are the ikar heck of as man as that. And you still always have that. Again, this is all a throwback also, because our cholent, at least the way we make the cholent, is usually cooked anyway enough beforehand. So it's a little bit of chumras, like I have chumras. I'm not convinced that the aluminum foil really works, the person who keeps it there all the time. What I just said now is going to create a huge chumra in Hachzara, because if what I said is correct, that's going to throw some serious curveballs into putting crockpots back on the fire and Shabbos. And again, that's already jumping ahead to the next topic. So again, lechatchila, if you want to use any of these aluminum foil eitzes, I think the better thing to do is to have everything covered, both elements itself as well as the knobs, for Bar and for Shuel that way, and even for Moshe myself that way. And according to what we're saying, there may be another important factor with Banazeh, at least relating to the crackpots. Are there other kinds of devices that could really completely and totally circumvent Shehiyah? So again, the way that circumvent Shehiyah is not such a great chokhmah. The way is to say, well, I don't really have a fear of Shevichat B'Gecholim. So what other kinds of devices don't have a concern of Shevichat B'Gecholim? So the post can write, the answer is very simple. There's nothing to rechat on. There's no adjustment. There's nothing to adjust. There is no dial. There's nothing there. It's an on-off switch. You plug it in, it works. You plug it out, you unplug it, you turn the press the button on or off. But once you have something that has dials that you can start to adjust, it's high, low, medium, different settings, different temperature settings, then you're asking for trouble in terms of Shem Yichad B'Chalm. But it's just a simply on and off kind of a device, so that would be okay. So that would be good for urn kinds of things, other kinds of things. So that would completely circumvent the issues of Shehiyah. The Pashup Shad is basically what I just said, is that if you just want to heat up water for before Shabbos, there should be nothing wrong with filling up an urn a second before Lech Benching, even though it's mamish ice cold, and let it just cook into Shabbos. What's the problem? The cooking itself is okay. There's nothing wrong. Don't miss quote. Nothing wrong with cooking on Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with setting up a device to cook on Shabbos. The problem is the Shem Yichad B'Gecholim, but there's no Shem Yichad B'Gecholim when it's something that's only an on-off. So it should be totally mutter. That's the Pashup Shad. Moshe had an interesting chumrah that others disagreed with. The Rav Moshe was of the opinion that you shouldn't put on an urn right before Shabbos for a different concern. Rav Moshe was worried that if the water is not fully boiled from before Shabbos, if the guy wants a cup of water on Friday night, the guy is walking around in the middle of Kabbal Shabbos, shouldn't be drinking water anyway at that point, but he goes ahead and he takes himself a cup of hot water and the water is not fully boiled, so that may cause the remaining water to possibly cook faster, because now you have less water in there, so maybe that may be a concern of Bishul. So Rav Shlomo Zalman writes that Yitaka shouldn't do that, you shouldn't take the water into the water, but just tell Klal Yisrael that I can't put up my urns because one in a trillion years that's going to happen. He says, "Ain't no chadish gezeres miatzmeinu." Like we don't find that gezer in Chazal. So why do you have to be chayish? And that's almost like a non shahiyah. That's almost like a technical, almost like a zehirus that Rav Moshe had. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes, he doesn't think Rav Moshe held it was usser. You think he held it was a bad idea? I don't know, whatever. So that's a nuanced of a question. But in terms of other kinds of devices, which are just simply on offs, so those are pretty good because nothing could potentially go wrong.
So if there was a crockpot that didn't have any
settings, but I don't think those exist.
No, I don't think so. But then theoretically, you could put it up right before.
So the best kind of a setup that we have are the plathas. You have a non-adjustable hot plate, so those shouldn't be a concern altogether. I didn't say they're totally good. There may be other issues. Maybe there are other issues. Maybe there aren't. Hopefully, we'll talk about that in great detail. But just the merely leaving the food on the hot plate from before Shabbos is really not such a bad thing, because even if it's not fully cooked, it's not fully cooked, probably not going to get cooked in Shabbos, so it's probably going to be fully cooked anyway. But it's not an issue of Shehiyah, because those are just, most of them are just pulled in and out. If it's an adjustable one, that becomes a little more problematic. So next week we'll try to continue a little bit more with Shehiyah, and then move as Shehiyah bridges into Hafsara as well.